Okay, so we're going to be reading from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text number 42. And then on the basis of that, we'll be discussing some of the teachings and the glories of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, as is his appearance day today. Okay. Translation in purple by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C., Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Or, if unsuccessful after long practice of yoga, he takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly such a birth is rare in this world. This is Krishna speaking to Arjuna about the fate of the unsuccessful yogi. Purple. Birth in the family of yogis or transcendentalists, those with great wisdom, is praised herein, because the child born in such a family receives a spiritual impetus from the very beginning of his life. It is especially the case in the Acharya or Goswami families. Such families are very learned and devoted by tradition and training, and thus they become spiritual masters. In India, there are many such Acharya families, but they have now degenerated due to insufficient education and training. By the grace of the Lord, there are still families that foster transcendentalists generation after generation. It is certainly very fortunate to take birth in such families. Fortunately, both our spiritual master, Om Vishnupad, Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj, and our humble self, had the opportunity to take birth in such families by the grace of the Lord. And both of us were trained in the devotional service of the Lord from the very beginning of our lives. Later on, we met by the order of the transcendental system. Okay. Gyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shilakaya Chakshu Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Ayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tvam Sijivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Pre Vancha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, so please repeat after me. Or if unsuccessful, after long practice of yoga, he takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly such a birth is rare in this world. Okay, so we begin by begging blessings, especially our seniors, so we can speak something of the glories of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur on this most auspicious day of his appearance. And we hope to kind of tie in some points from this particular purport, or see key principles, with some of the facets of his earlier life. as a child, he's training and learning as well. And then we will also, hopefully, if we're not too far behind in time, we'll discuss some of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's 64 principles of community. That he gave us principles for the Gaudiya Math to live by. So, in this particular verse, it is speaking about the rarity of being born in the family of transcendentalists. So we understand that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, his appearance took birth in 1874 on the 6th of February. He was born in Jagannath Puri, not far from the temple of Lord Jagannath. His father was an exalted Vaishnava, who was an exalted teacher in our line, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. The pastime of the appearance of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur actually begins before his conception. Bhakti Vinod Thakur, being a great and exalted preacher, someone who wrote so many literatures, and who himself was a pure eternal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we see that through his life and example, so much of his behavior is instructive. And it's very interesting that even though he's a pure devotee, even though Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was fully empowered, he felt himself incapable of fully spreading the mission of Krishna consciousness all over the world. He prayed for specifically a ray of Vishnu, that there would be assistance in his mission of giving this Krishna consciousness teaching to the world. And he had his fourth son, who was named Bimla Prasad. And this name, let's just go to my notes, because I was looking at this title, Bimla Prasad. So, let's see. Yes. So, this term Bimala refers to what is called Parashakti, or the internal potency. So Bimala Prasad literally means the mercy of the internal potency of the Lord. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was born with this title. So he was born with this title. So actually the actual title means the internal potency of Lord Jagannath, specifically. Bimala Prasad has that meaning. So we see that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur appeared. And one experienced astrologer stated that he has all the 32 symptoms in his body of a Mahapurush. So there are many Vedic sciences, and one of them is physiognomy. So experienced astrologers, not only can they tell something by the chart, but they can tell something by the physiognomy, because the different areas of the body relate to the different houses in the astrological chart. So for example, the first house is the head, right? The second house is the neck, and it goes on and on throughout the body. The 12th house is the feet, like that. Ninth house is the thighs. So an experienced astrologer, they can look at someone and they can tell different things about the person's astrological chart by looking at the different areas of the body. So the experienced astrologer stated that this person has all the 32 symptoms of a Mahapurusha, great personality. And it was predicted that he would be a world famous teacher of the ultimate goal of life. We also understand that when Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was born, he was born with the umbilical cord, right, on his body like a Brahmin thread, which is very interesting. The Vaishnavas are considered to be the best of the Brahmanas. So these were all what we call nimitta, right? In the Gurukul of Sandipani Muni, when Krishna and Balaram were growing up and when they were being educated, they were taught the 64 arts. Prabhupada lists the 64 arts in Krishna book. And one of the 64 arts is called Nimitta Gyan, which is a science of omens. So it was understood that one could understand certain significant things that are going to happen, or certain significant things about an individual by these nimittas, by these omens, if one understands the science. So the Brahman thread, the nature of the person's body, these things are nimittas. It is also the case that, and I think many of you know this pastime, there was a pastime where the Jagannath Rath Yatra cart was going on procession, and it stopped for 3 days outside the house of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. His mother brought the baby to offer her to the Lord, and the garland fell from the cart onto Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. And all these things were to be omens or indicators of the exalted position of such a person, and also the exalted mission of this individual as well. Bimla Prasad, in his childhood leela, or pastime, as we can say, he was extraordinarily intelligent. He had a perfect and photographic memory. Jai Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. Shishi Gonitai Guru Parampara Srila Prabhupada Tulsi Maharaj Ki Jai. Okay. So, he had a brilliant memory, and he was able to, upon reading anything just once, perfectly recall and understand it. Amazing. It is also the case that there are different samskars which are done when the child is very young to understand something about their inclinations. So they will sometimes put different artifacts which relate to different varnas before the baby and see what the baby will actually move towards, because that inclination can be there from also previous lives. So when this particular activity was done for Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur when he was very young, he immediately went for the Srimad Bhagavatam, which was also to indicate his status, that he would be a preacher of the teachings and the precepts of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it is interesting also in relation to this particular verse and purport that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's line actually goes all the way back to Lord Brahma. And we are, as a sampradaya, the Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya. So his actually family lineage goes back to the beginning of our sampradayic system. He was born in that particular line, and as he said in this purport and verse, such situations are extremely rare. In our Shastra, we are given two statements about the birth of an individual. We know that what we do in a particular life affects where we go in our next life. Right? We've heard that before. And at the same time, we know that what we think about at the time of death also impacts what happens in our next life. Antikala jamameva smaran mutva kalevaram ya prayati samadbhavam yati nasjascha samshayaha. So both factors play a particular role. Specifically, the activities throughout the life determine the character. The meditation at the end of the life determines the beginning state in the next life. Right? It's very interesting. There's a demarcation between the two. So sometimes you have an individual, they've been cultivating something in terms of their character, very, very deep character, because of very good practices and activities in a particular life. But at the time of death, they were thinking something that was not so necessarily good. So what happens is, in their next life, the situation that they're born in is not necessarily such an auspicious situation. But because their character was good from a previous life, they quickly accelerate beyond the beginning state in their next lifetime. Right? So you have some people, they're very pious in their previous life. Right? So their next life, they're very pious in their previous life, but at the time of death, they were thinking about or attached to something that wasn't so pious. So in their next birth, their beginning state isn't so pious, but they are pious. And of the two things between the situation you're born in and your character, which is the most important? Character, right? So because of their good character, even though they were attached to something inauspicious and that was their meditation at the time of death, because of their good character, they move quickly beyond that particular platform that they were born in. You see how it works? But of course, in the case of such pure devotees, usually their beginning state is very auspicious. There was a question that was asked to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. And this relates to Nectar of Instruction. So in Nectar of Instruction, what is it said about someone's birth and their body? It's said that such things should be overlooked. If someone is a Vaishnava, such things are overlooked. And very interesting, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur explains why. He was asked, how is it possible that sometimes we see such great and exalted Vaishnavas, but they have bodily imperfections, or they're born in a very low-born situation, right? They may have a diseased body, an infirm body, etc. And he explained how it works. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur explained, he said, if Vaishnavas were always born in auspicious circumstances, then the general mass of people would be dejected and they would feel demotivated. The general mass of people would say that, yes, it's okay for these people. It's okay for these people born in very exalted families, as is explained here, the family of transcendentalists. But what about us? Right? They can do these great things because from birth they had all this great training. But we didn't have that. Therefore, it's not possible for us to act like them or to come to the pure platform. So he says what Krishna does is Krishna will often allow such great personalities to take birth in seemingly inauspicious situations. Because then, by their position in such seemingly inauspicious situations, not only will they deliver those in that situation, so it's a merciful dispensation to those people, but also it sets the form of inspiration for everyone. Because if they can do it, even from difficult circumstances, then no one else can make the excuse that they cannot also become a devotee. Very, very interesting. But let's just explain here, in the case of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, and also Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, they received such extraordinary training from a very young age. I was just reading this morning that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he would study. He was at school, and he was meant to study the school books. It was never seen that he'd ever did any study of the school books, although in his exams, he was extraordinarily successful, right? And extraordinarily sharp, to the extent that his teachers, actually gave him the title Siddhanta Sarasvati. They gave him, they classed him, or they gave him that honorific title because of his great scholarship. And he would hear his father give lectures. His father would sometimes speak on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and other literatures, and he would hear his father give lectures. And what was amazing, it was noted that he would sit and listen with rapt attention. It's very interesting. There's a statement by Srila Prabhupada where he says that one has to give rapt attention to the teachings of the acharyas. But he says that one cannot give rapt attention if one is not pure in mind. And then Prabhupada says one cannot be pure in mind if he's not pure in his habits and lifestyle. Anyone heard that before? Yes. So these things are also nimittas. It was recognized that the ability of this personality to give such rapt attention to the teachings of the acharyas, even at a very young age, indicated extraordinary purity of mind. Because that rapt attention is a symptom of that purity of mind. Again, indicating Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's exalted extraordinary consciousness and position. So, even he would travel with his father. I think he was aged 11, although I'm not sure. I have to check that. He would travel with his father to visit the different places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And he would also, he memorized the Bhagavad Gita at the age of 7. Every single verse of the Bhagavad Gita at the age of 7, and could explain those verses. Right? He could give purports and explanations on these verses, age 7. There was this famous pastime that at the age of, it was 2 or 3, where there were some mangoes, and those mangoes, so it's 5? Oh, okay, so my research was wrong, it said that 2 or 3, but it was 5? Okay. So it was said that at the age of 5, thank you for, it's beneficial to correct us, at the age of 5, there was this pastime where there were some mangoes and he actually ate some of the mango. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually explained that this mango had not yet been offered to the Lord. And that everything should be offered to the Lord before it is taken. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was so repentant that from that moment onwards he vowed that he would never eat a mango again. Now, I don't know about you, but that's a serious, you know, to kind of, you know, to be mango-free for a lifetime is a serious thing, right? If you've never tasted a mango before, okay. But once you've had a mango, to give them up, that's some serious renunciation. That's a serious renunciation. So he was able to make such determined vows. I had a quote by Prabhupada where he spoke about this. Let me just see if I can find it. It's just very nice the way that Prabhupada speaks about this determination. Let's see. Yes, so Prabhupada comments on this incident. Whenever we offered him mango, he said, "No, I am an offender. I cannot take mango." He was thinking that I have offended Krishna in my childhood by taking the mango of the deity. So this is the characteristic of the acharya. They teach by their life's action. One should be so much determined. A child took the mango, there is no offense. But he took that vow. And it's also interesting when you hear Prabhupada speak about his spiritual master, there is also this mood of affection there. And oftentimes Prabhupada would state about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in a very tender way, he would explain that this person, he saved me. Very, very interesting. This person, you have a Nitya Siddha Vaishnava, right? Who is always thinking about Krishna, always absorbed in Krishna. But his mood is that he was saved by his own spiritual master. You have Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, an eternal resident of the spiritual world, who feels himself incapable of spreading Krishna consciousness. So he is praying in a dependent mood for the Lord to bring someone to assist him in spreading Krishna consciousness. And then you also have something very interesting. When Prabhupada was himself asked about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they said, if he was so powerful, why didn't he spread Krishna consciousness all over the world? And Prabhupada stated, he said, he is Vaishnava. He is all powerful. He could have delivered the entire world, but he felt sorry for us. Therefore, he left some service for us also to do. What does this mean? It means that the actual mercy is the opportunity to render service. It is by the opportunity to render service that one is able to make advancement and engage in devotional elevation. But always this mood is there of the acharyas, a mood of dependence and a mood of extraordinary humility and a mood of feeling that the Lord and his associates are the only means by which one can make devotional progress. So this is called Vaishnava Kripa. That every devotee has Kripa Shakti. And the more pure an individual is, the more Kripa Shakti that they actually have, the more potency they have to assist others. So they ask Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, it is stated in the Shastra that for one to come to the platform of engaging in devotional service and chanting the holy names of Krishna, one must, in their previous lives, have bathed in holy rivers, read the scriptures, done so many different devotional activities. But they said, Prabhupada, we don't feel that we've done any of these things. So how is it possible? How is it possible that we've come to this point that we're able to chant the holy names of Krishna? Prabhupada says, I am your devotional credits. What does that mean? It is just like if someone is a billionaire, they can immediately make someone else a millionaire. Right? If you have a lot, then you can benedict others with what you have. But one must have something. So in the Krishna consciousness movement, when people come to Krishna, how do you understand this? Why have they come? Is it the preacher or is it the individual? Because you have this contradiction. You also hear that when one comes to Krishna consciousness, they have Sukriti, right? Confirmation. They have Sukriti. They have Agyata Sukriti or Sukriti. So generally Agyata Sukriti for the beginning stages, they've done some devotional service. So how are the two things working? So it's like this. You have the devotee who is preaching, they have some credit. You have the person that they are preaching to, they have some credit. Right? Now, if the preacher has a lot of credit, he or she can make many, many devotees. The person they're preaching to may have some Agyata Sukriti, some degree of credit. If the person that they're preaching to has more Agyata Sukriti, has more credit than the person who's preaching to them, in many cases, the person that they preach to, so devotee, preaches to newcomer. The newcomer may accelerate beyond the person who preached to them. Yeah? The newcomer may come and become more serious than the person who actually told them about Krishna. You understand how it works? Right? Because in some cases, the devotee who's making or who's giving Krishna consciousness to the newcomer may be getting the blessing by being allowed to say it, to reignite someone else's dormant devotional service from many previous lives. You see how it works? So there's a a connection between these things. Yeah? All of these different credits are coming together along with the Lord's causeless mercy in coordinating everything according to what? The desires of the living entities. So extraordinary things are happening in devotional service. And specifically, if one is serious about being compassionate, and we're not talking about sentimental compassion, real compassion, compassion for the soul. The symptom of real compassion is to really try to become Krishna conscious. Because it is like a doctor who wants to save lives, right? Your child is sick, you take the child to the hospital, the doctor is very well intentioned and wants to save lives. Okay, what should we do with the child? I'm not quite sure yet because I haven't really studied medicine properly. Right? No, but don't worry, I'm well intentioned. Right? So we really want, I care about the child, I want to do good for the child. But do you know medicine? Do you actually know medicine? Because if you don't know medicine, how much can you actually help this particular child? So for the devotee, do you know Krishna? The degree to which we are intimately connected to Krishna is the degree to which we can deliver Krishna to others. Someone who has Krishna, they can deliver Krishna. So there is a pastime where Srila Prabhupada was standing before the deities and he turned to the devotees. He said, I have captured Krishna and I am holding him here captive in my heart. Now you come and take. This is the extraordinary gift and compassion of our line. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, so on and so forth. Their extraordinary adhikar is they have Krishna. We were in Bucklands recently and we were discussing the Dham, the holy Dham, and how there are different manifestations of the Dham. And one manifestation of the Dham is when we have a pure devotee who carries Krishna in the heart. Because they carry Krishna in the heart, as is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, wherever they are, that place is also Vrindavan. Another level is when they actually manifest Vrindavan externally in the world by their devotion. So wherever Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur is, Srila Prabhupada, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, wherever such personalities are, the atmosphere changes. We were meditating on this. You see Prabhupada disciples, there's so much variety there. And you think, how is it that all of these people came to Krishna consciousness? And you see what's uniform is they have this extraordinary attachment to Srila Prabhupada. But they're all very different people. They may be all very, very different people. And you think, how is it possible that all of these people love Srila Prabhupada so much? How? Because externally he looks like an old Indian gentleman. Externally. But somehow or other, he's able to attract people practically of every different background and nationality on the planet. Right? How is that possible? It means there's something about this person's consciousness that must speak to everyone at a very deep level beyond their material conditioning. There must be something about his presence that people can relate to and are attracted to, even though by the external conditioning, they are extraordinarily varied in their natures, characters, etc. And what is that universal factor? That universal factor is that the same Lord that is in the heart of the pure devotee who is fully manifesting, that same Lord is in the heart of every single other individual. And in the presence of such pure devotees, or through the connection, that doesn't mean they have to be physically present with the pure devotee, but through the connection by his vani, through his books, through his teachings, through his followers, they are able to make this, they're able to build this rapport. Right? Somehow this rapport is built, that there is something about this person, about this individual, that means that I should inquire from them. I should listen to them. I should find out more about this Krishna who they are always speaking about and who they are pushing us to surrender our lives to. So one who has Krishna, he or she can give Krishna. So the aim of our Krishna consciousness movement is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead by becoming the servant of the servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, you have a telescope. The telescope is constructed in such a way that there are many different lenses. And each lens increases the magnification. Right? So as there are more lenses, you are able to actually see more specifically what you're actually looking at, even though it's millions of miles away from you. Okay? So each of these lenses represents the servants of the Lord. Krishna is both extraordinarily far away, and he's also right before every single one of us. He's intimately close to every single one of us because he's in the heart. He is in the heart right next to the living entity. Right? So in just the same way that the telescope is constructed, the more lenses that there are between the observer and the observed, the more specifically they're able to have a deep sense of connection and awareness of that which is being observed. You understand the point? So the further back we go in terms of being a servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord, the more your relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes intimate and strong. That's actually how the transcendental system works. We're not looking to be Krishna's servant. We are looking to be the servants of the servants of the servants of Krishna's servants. And that position is exalted. The smaller the living entity becomes, the more the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests in the life of the living entity. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada, when he's asked about how he managed to spread this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world, it is very interesting. He doesn't speak about how Krishna empowered him, generally. What he says is, if I have any credit, it is that simply I did not deviate from the order of who? Of his spiritual master. Then he saved me. I did not deviate from the order of my spiritual master. It is the vani that is the active principle in spiritual life. Very, very powerful point. And very wonderfully shown by the life and example of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. Now there's something also very interesting. Because our teachings are one of transcendental personalism, as you examine the life, or rather, as you examine the character of Srila Prabhupada and the character of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, do you see that they are still distinct individuals? Yes or no? Yes. It's not that one is an imitation of the other. You notice that, right? There's sometimes this idea that people have to imitate someone else. Oh, he's a pure devotee. Why can't you be like him? You should be like him in consciousness. But you don't imitate. What's very wonderful is that in both the conditioned state and in the pure state, every single living entity is an individual. In all states, every devotee is an individual. So we want to imitate. So we do not want to imitate. We want to follow the teachings that are given. And in that way, one is able to make spiritual progress. In that way, we're able to make real and lasting spiritual progress. Let's give a few other points and then we'll maybe read some of the statements of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. Okay. So, it is interesting that at the age of 7, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was constructing what is called the Bhakti Bhavan. And while engaged in that construction, a Kurma deity was found. So we know that there are many different incarnations of the Lord, and one of them is Kurma Avatar. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was given the Kurma deity to start worshipping, and he started worshipping him in a regulated way from the age of 7. It's interesting because this purport speaks about training and education. And we also find, which is very interesting, that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he trained Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur in publishing and editing from a very young age. There was always this thread about the mission of distributing transcendental literature. And Prabhupada states in one purport that this is our family business. Flooding the world with transcendental literature, transcendental knowledge. Divyakyan ride prakashito. The spiritual master is glorified. Why? He opens my darkened eyes and he fills my heart with transcendental knowledge. He's my birth. He's my Lord, birth after birth. Very, very interesting. But we often don't take full advantage of this transcendental knowledge. So there are two categories or two states to the consciousness. The citta and the hridaya. So the deeper aspect is the hridaya because it's the heart. Right? The deeper level of the consciousness. Okay, so the deeper level, is the citta. So the hridaya is the more superficial level. The citta is the deeper level. So the question then comes up, how do we get these teachings to go very deep within the consciousness? Because there's a difference between hearing and deeply accepting or imbibing within the heart. Right? How is it that these teachings can go to the citta, to the deeper aspects of the consciousness, which then lend themselves to spiritual transformation? And the answer that is given in different places in the Shastra is that one has to hear. And then one has to meditate on what one has heard. And then one has to apply that which one has heard. And through consistent hearing, meditating on and applying it, the teachings become absorbed at a deeper level of consciousness. Then these teachings become transformative rather than simply something that we've heard many, many times. I'll be honest, when I was coming to give class, I was thinking many of the devotees, they've heard so many of these pastimes of Bhaktisiddhanta. And you see that sometimes when class is being given, you can see almost like the devotees can predict what you're going to say. Yeah, he's going to talk about the mango pastime again. Okay, yeah, you know, like that. It's kind of like, yeah, he's going to talk about the umbilical cord. Yeah, you heard that one before. Yeah, right. So I was thinking how to make this slightly different. I thought if we read from some of his statements and also share some other different points in different ways, then it keeps the consciousness alive and alert. Because for it to go in, you have to pay attention. Yeah, for it to go in, the consciousness has to meet the teachings. So we've got a few minutes left, because I think class finishes at 9, and then there'll be Abhishek. So I'm going to read some of the principles which were given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, his 64 principles of community. So, And then we'll just kind of elaborate on these and then we'll end. Yeah? Okay. For Q&A, yes, we will leave some time for Q&A as well. Okay. So we'll just give them, not in any particular order. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the only enjoyer. Everyone and everything else is the object of his enjoyment. Now, it's an interesting statement. Because when we sometimes try to tell people that there's no enjoyment in the material world, to be honest, for most people, we immediately lose credibility. Right? You say that to someone, they're like, no, you're wrong. I had a great ice cream just yesterday. Right? It was really tasty. It was very enjoyable. So we don't mean that. We know that there is some chapala sukha. There is some flickering happiness. But what we're trying to say, when we say that there's no enjoyment in the material world, we mean that there's no lasting enjoyment. And we mean that in many cases, the very thing that causes someone to be happy today is exactly the same thing that causes them distress tomorrow. Right? So there's a chain. There's the object that one is engaging in, and there's the full reaction. People just see the initial reaction. Oh, I had something to eat. It was enjoyable. It was nice. But they don't see that same thing is going to lead them to a greater degree of suffering in the long term. I mean, just think about it. You know, you have people in this world so-called enjoying their steak, right? Their steak and chips or whatever they're having. And you ask them, did you enjoy that meal? They're going to tell you it was wonderful, it was fantastic. But what they don't see, what they don't understand is that in Vedic literature, the word for meat is mamsa, right? Meaning literally me and you. That means as I've killed you and enjoyed you today, in the future, you're going to get to kill me. Now, how much enjoyment can you get when you know you've just set yourself up to be slaughtered? So they're not having the full vision. That's why we say there's no enjoyment in the material world. Because material activities, even if they're pious, cause a form of trauma. Think about this. As adults now, if someone kidnapped you and threw you into a cabinet, locked you up in the cabinet for 9 months, how would you feel? Right? And that 9 months of being locked up in a cabinet, that's called the 9 months before you take birth in this material world, before you come out of this material world. It is such a traumatic experience. So when the living entity comes out, they've come out, they already have a trauma. It's traumatizing. And that's where we begin. It's so traumatic that the living entity remembering prays, dear Lord, please, if you just get me out of this situation, I promise you in this lifetime, what? I'll remember you. And when we come out, what happens? We forget him straight away. And it's only by the mercy of the Lord that we don't remember what it was like to be in the womb. Isn't that interesting? He's taken that memory away from us. Savasya chahamriti shani vishto mata smriti gyanam apohanam cha. He's giving the knowledge, the remembrance, and the forgetfulness. That's why we don't remember. It's so traumatic that if you remembered, it would be difficult. So therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, there's no enjoyment in this material world. And therefore, we want to come back to the transcendental platform. Yeah? What is that transcendental platform? It is that everything is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. Now, it's interesting. Srila Prabhupada was asked by one of his disciples, how do you know when Krishna is pleased? The answer he would normally give is that you know that Krishna is pleased when the spiritual master is pleased. But on a particular occasion, I think Keshava Bharati Maharaj asked him, and he said that you know that Krishna is pleased when you're happy. Interesting. Why? Because we're part and parcel of Krishna. Mamai Vamso Jivaloke, Amsa. We're part and parcel of Krishna. So when the whole is satisfied, then in a very deep sense, on a spiritual level, the part and parcel is also feeling a deep sense of satisfaction and nourishment. Does that make some sense? Yeah? Okay. Let's read another statement. Those who have not learned to develop their propensity to serve the Supreme Lord from self-realized souls, no matter how pleasing their association may be, it should never be desired. Interesting. I'll repeat that. Those who have not learned to develop their propensity to serve the Supreme Lord from self-realized souls, no matter how pleasing their association may be, it should never be desired. What is happening in the association of anyone? We are picking up the value system of others. It's not just the words and the example, but subtly, we are picking up the value system of others. And that value system is carried within the consciousness. You've seen that. You're around different people, they have different moods, right? You're in the presence of certain people, you feel they're very warm, right? This person's very warm, they're very kind, there's a very warm mood. You're around some other people, you feel the temperature's just gone down, right? This person is just something that's chilly, like, no, why? I just feel cold, right? Because we carry our meditations in our consciousness. That is why Krishna, that's why when it said, man mana bhava mad bhakto, always thinking of Krishna, that's not a small thing. If a living entity is meditating on Krishna, what's going on in your consciousness is going to actually affect the consciousness of those people that you're in the association of. Right? And that is why when people are around pure devotees, when people are around Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, the atmosphere actually changes. The atmosphere is actually different. It's hard to put into words, but it changes because their consciousness has Krishna there. So it's not just that they're speaking something nice or they look a certain way. People actually think there's something different going on. The atmosphere is different. It becomes spiritually surcharged. I remember reading one Vyas Puja offering to Srila Prabhupada by one of his disciples, and he said, spiritual energy funded in your being. And it is like that. If one is blessed to pick up or be conscious of such things, then one is able to understand that by exalted consciousness, so many other things are going on. In Bhagavatam, when Kardama Muni is observing Devahuti, he observes her subtle body, right? And he's able to observe her subtle body and see that it has a great luster, it's so bright. And even when Lord Chaitanya was sitting down in the presence of the Mayavadi sannyasis, right? They were able to pick up something about his aura. And it's sometimes described that his aura was as brilliant as the sun, or brilliant like millions of suns. So everyone carries a certain presence, certain value system, certain consciousness. And there's nothing more powerful than consciousness, because the mind is like a magnet. These different circumstances that we're drawing into our lives is based upon our consciousness. So if we bring about a deeper Krishna consciousness, the instances that come into our lives will change. And at the same time, certain things will come in, but we will deal with them differently. Do you see the point? Your consciousness acts as a platform from which you view the world and from which you experience the world. So the higher the consciousness, the more that you experience everything from a position of strength. There's nothing more powerful than consciousness. Yeah. Nothing is more powerful than consciousness. And therefore, it is also a warning. Because if we open ourselves up to the mundane consciousness of other people, even so-called nice guys, right, then we'll find ourselves also potentially going down. That doesn't mean that we can't physically be around such people, but the idea is that we want to give them a higher state of consciousness and not come down to a lower state of consciousness. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So, I think we'll have to stop there because it's almost 9 and I don't want to be late. And we'll, so, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Janita Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bo. We have a few minutes for questions or comments.